Chapter 59. Expenses. It's a good match for my purposes, because if I am willing to fork out a sum of money, he may be willing to give up his chance of diplo, so that we shall have it out and out, and when I die you will have the consolation of going to the place you would like to go to wherever I may go. I wish you would not talk of dying in that light way, dear. It's rather a heavy way, Lou, for I shall have to pay a heavy sum, 40,000, at least. But why are we to invite them to the Abbey? Said Lady Malinger. I do not like women who gamble, like Lady Crackstone. Oh, you will not mind her for a week. Besides, she is not like Lady Crackstone, because she gambled a little, any more than I am like a broker, because I'm a Whig. I want to keep Grandcourt in good humor, and to let him see plenty of this place, that he may think the less of Diplo. I don't know yet whether I shall get him to meet me in this matter. And if Dan were to go over on a visit there, he might hold out the bait to him. It would be doing me a great service. This was meant for Deronda. Daniel is not fond of Mr. Grandcourt, I think, is he? Said Lady Malinger, looking at Deronda inquiringly. There is no avoiding everybody one doesn't happen to be fond of, said Deronda. I will go to Diplo. I don't know that I have anything better to do since Sir Hugo wishes it. That's a trump, said Sir Hugo, well pleased. And if you don't find it very pleasant, it's so much experience. Nothing used to come amiss to me when I was young. You must see men and manners. Yes, but I have seen that man, and something of his manners too, said Deronda. Not nice manners, I think, said Lady Malinger. Well, you see they succeed with your sex, said Sir Hugo, provokingly. And he was an uncommonly good-looking fellow when he was 22 or 23 like his father. He doesn't take after his father in marrying the heiress, though. If he had got Miss Arrowpoint and my land too, confound him, he would have had a fine principality. Deronda, in anticipating the projected visit, felt less disinclination than when consenting to it. The story of that girl's marriage did interest him. What he had heard through Lush of her having run away from the suit of the man she was now going to take as a husband, had thrown a new sort of light on her gambling, and it was probably the transition from that fevered worldliness into poverty which had urged her acceptance, where she must in some way have felt repulsion. All this implied a nature liable to difficulty and struggle elements of life which had a predominant attraction for his sympathy, due perhaps to his early pain in dwelling on the conjectured story of his own existence. Persons attracted him, as Hans Meyrick had done, in proportion to the possibility of his defending them, rescuing them, telling upon their lives with some sort of redeeming influence, and he had to resist an inclination, easily accounted for, to withdraw coldly from the fortunate. But in the movement which had led him to repurchase Gwendolyn's necklace for her, and which was at work in him still, there was something beyond his habitual compassionate fervor, something due to the fascination of her womanhood. He was very open to that sort of charm, and mingled it with the consciously utopian pictures of his own future, yet anyone able to trace the folds of his character might have conceived that he would be more likely than many less passionate men to love a woman without telling her of it. Sprinkle food before a delicate-eared bird. There is nothing he would more willingly take, yet he keeps aloof, because of his sensibility to checks which to you are imperceptible. And one man differs from another, as we all differ from the Bosjesman, in a sensibility to checks that come from variety of needs, spiritual or other. It seemed to foreshadow that capability of reticence in Deronda, that his imagination was much occupied with two women, to neither of whom would he have held it possible that he should ever make love. Hans Meyrick had laughed at him for having something of the knight-errant in his disposition, and he would have found his proof, if he had known what was just now going on in Deronda's mind about Mira and Gwendolyn. Deronda wrote without delay to to announce his visit to Diplo, and received in reply a polite assurance that his coming would give great pleasure. That was not altogether untrue. Grandcourt thought it probable that the visit was prompted by Sir Hugo's desire to court him for a purpose which he did not make up his mind to resist, and it was not a disagreeable idea to him that this fine fellow, whom he believed to be his cousin under the rose, would witness, perhaps with some jealousy, Henley Malinger Grandcourt play the commanding part of betrothed lover to a splendid girl whom the cousin had already looked at with admiration. Grandcourt himself was not jealous of anything, unless it threatened his mastery which he did not think himself likely to lose. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.